Books on gardening this month. We receive support from Dale's Auto Body, serving the auto body needs of Grand Rapids and surrounding communities since 1984, performing auto body and collision repair, as well as auto glass replacement, dedicated to getting you back on the road after an accident. More information at dalesautobodyinc.com.
Support also comes from Woodworks Homes, dedicated to the art of building in northern Minnesota, by constructing handcrafted new homes and offering remodeling services. More at woodworksmn.com.
And you are listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people and land of northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Listen at KAXE.org or on your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Thank you. And just a quick look at the weather today. It's going to be sunny skies, but it's going to be a little cooler. Temps are in the 43 to 46 range. West-northwest winds 10 to 15.
Your news in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Democrats on the House Oversight Committee have released several emails from the estate of convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. The emails refer to President Trump, including before he won election to the White House. The emails raise new questions about Trump's relationship with Epstein. NPR has not independently confirmed the veracity of the correspondence. NPR's Stephen Fowler has more.
These new Epstein emails appear to reveal more connections to the disgraced financier. It's part of a 23,000 document release turned over from Epstein's estate to the House Oversight Committee. There's a 2015 email thread between Epstein and author Michael Wolff where the pair discuss a potential question from an upcoming CNN interview with Trump about Trump and Epstein's personal ties. A section from Wolff reads in part, quote, "I think you should let him hang himself. If he says he hasn't been on the plane or to the house, then that gives you a valuable PR and political currency," end quote.
NPR's Stephen Fowler reporting. Trump has consistently denied any meaningful connection to Epstein. The House is scheduled to vote today on a spending measure that could end the government shutdown. NPR's Windsor Johnston reports even if it does end, the nation's airports won't bounce back right away.
The government may soon reopen, but the nation's air travel system will need more time. Former FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt tells NPR that it's not just the control towers feeling the pressure.
The TSA is equally burdened, and there'll be a surge of traffic, of course, and that'll challenge their system to get people through security into the boarding. So I think just patience and take as much caution as you can to keep in the information loop as to the status of your flights.
Babbitt warns that longstanding staffing shortages mean it could take days, maybe longer, for schedules to stabilize. According to FlightAware.com, more than 9,000 flights have been canceled since last Friday. Windsor Johnston, NPR News, Washington.
Israeli settlers have attacked the biggest dairy farm in the Israeli-occupied West Bank. In a rare move, Israeli police say they've arrested four Israelis for extremist violence, as NPR's Lauren Freyer reports.
Footage from the scene shows burned trucks, smashed windows, and a warehouse blackened and looted. The Israeli military says the perpetrators were masked Israeli civilians who, after injuring Palestinian staff, turned on Israeli soldiers and attacked them, damaging their vehicles. The United Nations says settler violence hit a record high last month during the Palestinian olive harvest, with an average of 8 attacks per day. Most go unpunished by Israel. In this case, a senior Israeli military commander called on soldiers to, quote, not stand idly by. The Palestinian Economy Ministry is urging other countries to place perpetrators on international terrorism lists. Lauren Freyer, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
This is NPR. The International Chess Federation has filed a formal complaint against former world chess champion Vladimir Kramnik. He's accused of harassment and of insulting the dignity of fellow players. Kramnik is accused of making unproven cheating allegations against Daniel Naroditsky. Naroditsky denied the cheating allegations. He died last month at the age of 29. NASA says it will try again today to launch a pair of spacecraft designed to explore the atmosphere and weather conditions on Mars. Joe Palka explains.
It's taken a while to get the Escapade probes started on their journey. They were supposed to be carried into space a year ago by the New Glenn rocket made by Blue Origin. But a variety of factors led NASA to scrub those plans. For a while, it wasn't clear how or whether Escapade would get to Mars, but ultimately NASA decided to put the probes back on the New Glenn rocket. Once at Mars, Escapade will make measurements that will help scientists understand how charged particles from the sun affect the thin Martian atmosphere. The twin probes will let scientists create 3D images of how those particles are deflected around Mars by the planet's magnetic field. For NPR News, I'm Joe Palca.
Federal weather experts and officials at NASA are warning of severe solar storms today. These could interrupt some radio and GPS communications. They are also triggering the brilliant northern lights in some areas. These are usually spotted in Alaska and Canada, but the colorful displays were seen last night as far south as Alabama and Florida. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Lodestar Foundation, inspired by the principle that helping those in need is a path to a happier, healthier, and more meaningful life. Learn more at lodestarfoundation.org. This is NPR.
How many times have you heard someone say, if I had his money, I would do things my way. But little they know that it's so hard to find one rich man in ten with a satisfied mind. Money can't buy back your youth when you're old, or a friend when you're lonely, or love that's grown cold. The wealthiest person is a pauper at times. Compared to the man with a satisfied mind, when my life is over, my friends and my loved ones, I'll leave them no doubt. But one thing's for certain, when it comes my time, I'll leave this old the satisfied mind. I'll leave this old world with a satisfied mind.
And that was the amazing Mavis Staples from her new album, Sad and Beautiful World. That song is called Satisfied Mind, and it's also our album of the week. Released at 86 years young, Staples is defiant in the face of evil and is hopeful for a brighter future as she's ever been. Sad and Beautiful World was produced by Brad Cook and features guests like Buddy Guy, Waxahachie, Bon Iver, Derek Trucks, MG Lenderman, and more. Let us know what you think of the album of the week. Text us at 218-326-1234. And now it's time for our monthly segment, Twist and Sprout, where we talk with Beltrami County Master Gardeners. This month, we're talking about gardening books. And joining us today is Dan Sherman. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Well, thank you. November is a time of year when people should be trying to reduce the number of animals that are eating their garden. And that's what I'm intent on. But I don't think you want to hear hunting stories. Okay. I'm going to start with a book called Teeming with Microbes. It's a book by Lohenfeld and Lewis. And a lot of gardening books are big on pictures, but not big on substance.
Mm-hmm.
This one is not the case. And it tells all about the microbes, the things that we can't see in the soil, and that make soil work. Soil doesn't work without microbes.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want sterile soil.
No.
It has to have bacteria and
fungi. And plants don't grow without healthy soil. I've learned that the hard way.
Yes. Soil is everything. It all starts there. Soil is a lot like our own gut.
Mm-hmm.
It contains, we can't live without the microbes in our intestines, and there's a lot of similarities between the two, actually. So if I was to pick a book for you to read, I think I'd start with that one.
Is it too much substance? Like, is it overwhelming with all the scientific detail, or is it approachable?
It wasn't overwhelming for me. This winter, I plan to borrow a microbiology text so I can follow up on this stuff. It's an amazing world that we can't see out there. Okay, I'd like to encourage people to download Hoopla. You can find that at the library. It's supported there. And whenever you have your cell phone, you can download a book and start reading it. You don't need to play solitaire all the time on your cell phone. And you can find a number of those books. One book I found recently was called Beautiful Corn. I think it's an amazing book. It's not about sweet corn, though. It's about all of the other kinds of corn, and corn is really a fascinating story.
It's a plant that's evolved with people for so long.
Right, and there's so many things you can do with corn, you know, the corn bread and corn meal, and it's a wonderful book there. And that's on, you can find that on Hoopla, so you don't even have to go to the library to find it. There's two books I have now that they might not make you a better gardener, but gardeners really like them. And I'm going to start with Braiding Sweetgrass.
Yeah.
The key point of this, I think, is The Honorable Harvest, which tells us how to benefit from the natural world, but not abuse it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's on Hoopla as well. This winter, I want to read another book called Native American Gardening, Buffalo Bird Woman's Guide to Traditional Methods. And it's about a Hidatsu woman who was born, I think, about 10 years after Lewis and Clark went through. The Hidatsu were next to the Mandans, and Lewis and Clark stayed with the Mandans during that winter.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily a gardening book, but that's on the top of my list to read this year.
The Hidatsu shield bean. Are you familiar with that variety? That's that was a seed that she cultivated. I worked at Seed Savers Exchange in Decorah, Iowa, and that was one of the beans, one of the heirloom beans that we saved. And it's beautiful. The bean itself is beautiful, but it's got a long history tied to the buffalo bird woman.
There's a squash variety that comes from there, too, and I'm planning to grow that this year. It's a pretty one, too.
Yeah.
Cool. So gardeners like to read that material there. I'm going to switch to a couple of videos there, and you can find these on your computer. They're YouTube, and one is called Back to Eden, and one of our gardeners likes to watch that every year.
Oh, what's it about?
Well, it's about global warming and what the soil does with global warming and how you can improve that with your impact on global warming by taking care of the soil.
What was the name of it again?
Back to Eden.
Back to Eden.
There's a whole branch of gardening called Back to Eden Gardening, and I'm hoping that we have that she gives one a class on it this year, this spring.
Mm-hmm.
But she's been doing that for about 3 years, and I need the class. I need it badly. another similar to that, and I haven't watched these yet, but it's on my list for this winter. And it's called Kiss the Ground. And I don't know the difference. They're both about an hour and a half long program. So climate change and soil health.
So I'm curious, Dan, when you're reading these books, do you like take notes as you're reading them, or are you kind of just like memorizing things? Like what's your approach from like these research books?
Reading is a sleeping pill for me.
Oh.
I read when I go to sleep, and now I have a piece of paper there handy to mark them, but I don't take notes on them. I will get that the next day.
My gardening books are, I read it, but then I have a stack of Post-its. And I'm marking, Elliot Coleman is a garden book author that I've read a ton. And it's like, it's so much reference, and it's like, oh, yeah, what did he say about whatever? So I read it, but then I flip back to all my tattered tabs.
Okay. You need to find your own method there to get it.
To navigate through
it. It also works for music books as well.
Yeah,
if it's a book about genre of music, I highly recommend making
tabbing.
Post-it notes to remember bands to check out later.
Okay, I was looking, I did a little bit of research just on books. And one that I came across here is called The Botany of Desire. Apparently it's been out for about 10 years or so, but I haven't seen it, by Michael Pollan. And Michael Pollan is a wonderful author. You need to read all of his books, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I read a book of his called The Omnivore's Dilemma.
Yep, that's great.
And I read it, and then I had to turn around and read it again right afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like a new book, too.
Yeah, I did that with Botany of Desire. He does such a good job of the relationship of people and plants and just how intertwined we are. And plants have evolved with us, and we've evolved with different plants. It's fascinating.
A book in the Bemidji Library is called The Potato, The Propitious Esculent. Okay, you might have a hard time spelling that, but if you go to kxc.org, I have a little summary of all of the books that I've listed here, so you don't have to write them down and they're spelled correctly. Anyway, propitious esculent is a fun word to say.
It is.
And I actually know what it means. It just means, I should make you read the book
to find out.
A little teaser for the book.
Okay.
Don't spoil it.
And it's about the history of potatoes, and there's a lot of nasty things happen to people because of potatoes.
Yeah,
potatoes could keep people alive, barely alive, while they're being worked to death.
Yep.
So, and it affected every part of the world. Mm-hmm. They're all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
There's a book that I like to disagree with, but I use it a lot, and it's called The Square Foot Gardening. There's four editions out now. It's been touted as the most popular gardening book ever written.
Okay. Oh.
And I can believe it. You can find it in stores like Menards. They keep a copy there normally for sale there. It's oversimplified and overly optimistic.
Is that why you take issue with it?
And I disagree with a lot of things, but I keep going back to it, so it must have some relevance.
Yeah, what is it that keeps you coming back to it? Like what?
Well, I want to see what they say about it. The number of seeds per inch.
Yeah.
And they have it all broken down in one seed per square foot and four and, 12, 16.
Okay.
They say you can grow 12 carrots per square foot, but I have found that I can grow 49. That's a 7x7 pattern.
Yeah, right.
And they'll be a little bit smaller, but they're a nice eating size of carrot. And they never mix their square foot. So I'd like to put a pepper in the middle and put radishes around the outside.
Sure.
Pick the radishes while the pepper is thinking about growing. They tend to be slow to get started again.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's a good gardening book, and it's available locally. I'm running out of material here. The Vegetable Gardener's Container Bible was a nice book. Author is Smith. I don't know his first name.
And there's an original, The Vegetable Gardener's Bible, too, by the same author. Is that correct?
Probably, yes.
That seems, I think that's a second book by that author.
So when November, the garden should be pretty much taken care of, put away kind of thing. Now is the time to, kind of hunker down and do a little research on your own, start planning for next year. When do you start you already said you're planning to plant that squash next year. Mm-hmm. Are you already planning what you're going to be doing next year for garden season?
Well, right now I'm still licking my wounds from a very disappointing gardening season. The weeds won this year. But I'm going to be studying a lot more on weed control, and I hope to share some of those with classes this spring.
Yeah. Do you have a go-to book about weeds?
I don't yet. So
that's
still on the list there.
Yeah.
But I'm still trying to find some meat to go with my potatoes.
Yeah. Because I know we have a good book about, organic pest control or whatever, but I'm asking off the top of my head because I don't recall a good weed book either.
There's an organization about weed control.
Okay.
And I've consulted that a little bit, but the big research period starts here in the winter when it's too cold to go outside. And
yep. It's a good time of year to do it. And I wonder, Rodale Press, they publish so many books about gardening, and that would maybe be a place to look up.
Yeah. I find them to be the picture book.
Yeah, they are very heavy. Yeah. Yep. Light on substance, but cover a lot of topics.
So if you have a weed book or a gardening book that you want to recommend, you can text us at 218-326-1234. We'd love to hear from you. And like Dan said, we're going to have this on the website, kxc.org, the list of all the books that were mentioned here today. Dan, so what have you got? Do you have a seed catalog yet?
Oh, I've got one in the mail so far. And it's a little bit early for me on that one. It's the seed catalog. I always get my corn and get corn from that mostly.
Do you go right to the new varieties, new releases? Are you tempted by the bold predictions and promises?
No, not so much. There's some that I like that I'm going to keep going with, and then there's some I'm still searching for.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for them. The new releases.
I always get something new.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you always like something shiny and new.
Yeah, I know. I'm always chasing after the next best thing.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for joining us. Like I said, we'll have these books listed on our website, kxe.org, sometime this week. Thanks for joining us, Dan.
Thank you for having me here today.
Yeah, and now we're going to play a tune for you. This is a new one from Chet Faker. This song is called This Time for Real.
think of mine. I've been thinking about it all damn night. If you let it, it can feel just right. Come on, baby, we can feel alright before I die. This time for me,
and that was Chet Faker with a new tune, This Time For Real. I believe I heard Jennifer play that on the Monday morning show.
Yeah, I like Chet Faker.
Maybe it was last week.
No, he had a new thing out. I like his name because I like Chet Baker also.
Okay, so let me
I'm judging
this.
A book by the cover.
He sounds nothing like Chet Baker.
I know, though. I just think it's so a clever. Like,
his name reminds you of someone else.
Yeah, it's a clever play on a name. I'm a simple person, Andrew.
That is Jen Kellen. I'm Andrew DeZingle. You're tuned in to the Wednesday Morning Show. Programming on KXE is supported in part by the Minnesota Humanities Center, distributing more than $6 million in cultural heritage grants. Funding is available to individuals and organizations that will create, celebrate, and teach Minnesota's diverse arts, culture, and heritage, including Indigenous organizations, historically underrepresented communities, and recent immigrants and veterans. Details at mnhum.org/grants. And we got some text from the text line. We heard from Susan. We were talking about Anne of Green Gables, upcoming conversation on Area Voices this morning, talking about the musical that's going on. And Susan from Cotton says, generation gap, never read Anne, was all in on Laura Ingalls Wilder. And of course, the fabulous Pippi Longstockings.
Yeah, we were having a conversation off air that we kind of, in our minds, confused Anne of Green Gables and Pippi Longstocking. Just because they were both.
Yeah, if you were to play a game of like, is this an Anne of Green Gables story or is this a Pippi Longstocking story? And you would describe it to me, I wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah, because I read all of Pippi and same.
I've read none of Pippi.
I've read Laura Ingalls Wilder entire series probably 3 or 4 times. All the books.
I don't know if I've read the entire series. I've read majority for sure. What about Farmer Boy? Did you read that?
Oh, yeah, that's part of the series. Almanzo?
I don't consider it part of the series.
You don't?
I consider that like a spinoff.
No. It was right in the thick of it. well, and the interesting, well, that's a side tangent. Because I was born and raised in Brookings, which is close to DeSmit, which is where Laura Ingalls Wilder, that was one of their homesteads. And I loved Laura Ingalls Wilder, read all the books, and then missed the field trip because I had chicken pox.
Oh, no.
Which I got from my little brother. He brought it home.
How old were you?
I was in fourth grade.
Fourth grade. Wow, yeah, you got it later, though.
I did. So I was kind of miserable. And my class got me a pink pencil from the Laura Ingalls Wilder Museum, which was so nice of them. I think I might still have that pencil someplace, too.
Wow.
Meant a lot to me because I missed out on the field trip. And now here it is. I've been out of fourth grade for a long time. I've still never been to the museum.
Wow. So,
not only
what's
do
holding
I,
you back, Jen?
Well, I got all this Anne of Green Gables to get through. When I get that off my list, I'm going to the museum.
We also heard from Betty from Nevis. We were talking about gardening books with the Twist and Sprout segment. Okay. And for garden books, she recommends Rush Stout's No Work Garden Book.
Ruth Stout.
What
sorry.
Did I say? Ruth?
You said Rush. Ruth.
Oh my gosh. Great old book on gardening. Her main focus is on mulching, no tilling and weeding. I've gardened the Ruth way for years.
Yes, that is a popular method. Lots of layers of mulch.
Lots of layers of mulch.
Mm-hmm. Keeps the weeds down.
So, like I said, coming up in a bit, we got Area Voices, but right now it's time for the Up North Report.
For KAXE News, I'm Chelsea Perkins with the Up North Report. The following story contains details that may be disturbing for some listeners. The Minnesota Court of Appeals has reversed a decision by Lake County District Court to deny an order for protection in a case involving alleged sexual extortion. The appeals court opinion states the lower court clearly erred in its findings of fact about the credibility of the alleged victim's testimony. A concurring opinion from Judge Japal Harris describes the findings as, quote, consistent with several sexual assault myths. The case involves a 2024 order for protection sought by a woman against her ex-husband who was allowing her to live with him in Silver Bay after their divorce when she needed a place to live. In filing the order, the woman said she believed she would lose her housing if she did not agree to multiple instances of sexual contact with her ex. The district court ultimately determined the ex-husband's testimony describing the encounters as consensual to be more credible. The denial stated the woman was less credible because, among other findings, she never called the police, never reported it to friends, and talked nicely about the ex on social media. The appeals court, however, notes she did report the matter to police, the social media post was misinterpreted, and the other stated reasons were not supported by evidence. The matter drew the attention of Standpoint, a St. Paul organization of attorneys and advocates against domestic and sexual violence, which filed an amicus brief. Judge Harris writes, quote, if this is allowed to stand, we risk that people who most need the protection of the court may choose to not seek this protection for fear of being subjected to these archaic myths. The appeals court did not weigh in on whether the facts of this particular case support an order for protection and remanded it back to the district court for further consideration, but the lower court is not permitted to rely on any of its original findings. The Minnesota Department of Health has submitted an application to the federal government for participation in the Rural Health Transformation Program. The application seeks $1 billion in funding over 5 years from the program, which was created by the so-called Big Beautiful Bill. It aims to improve health outcomes and expand access to health care along with the workforce. Proposals include creating new opportunities for health screenings, using telehealth for preventive care and chronic disease management, and increasing the use of community-based frontline workers. It would also aim to strengthen the financial health of rural healthcare providers. The Minnesota Star Tribune reports the program would not offset the much bigger financial losses expected by looming cuts to the federal Medicaid program. The state will be notified by the end of the year if its application has been approved. Attorney General Keith Ellison will be in northern Minnesota this week as part of his series of Protecting Minnesota Community Forums. Ellison will discuss his work to, quote, protect the rights and freedoms of the people of Minnesota at the events. People can also share their stories or concerns. Events are scheduled for 6 to 8 p.m. Wednesday in Grand Rapids, 1 to 3 p.m. Thursday in Ely, and 6 to 7:30 p.m. in Hibbing on Thursday night. An earlier event on Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. in Grand Rapids will focus specifically on veterans. People can RSVP to the events to receive location information. Find more info at kaxe.org. Dozens of Northland athletes from 9 area schools will compete at the state swimming and diving meet this week. Megan Buffington has more.
Brainerd's 200 and 400 freestyle relays will return to the state meet after finishing second and sixth last year. Three of the four swimmers on each team will be racing again this year. Senior Avery Durr is part of both relays and will also be swimming the 100 breaststroke. She finished eighth in the event last season. Northern Minnesota's other returning medalist is Two Harbors senior Bella Imholt. In 2024, she took sixth in the 200 freestyle and seventh in the 100 backstroke. She'll race in both events again and the 400 freestyle relay. Bemidji, Grand Rapids, Hibbing, Park Rapids, Rock Ridge, Mesabi East, and Detroit Lakes all qualified at least one individual entry and a relay team. You can find the full list of qualifiers at kaxe.org. Diving preliminaries kick off the state meet on Thursday. Swimming prelims will follow on Friday with all finals on Saturday. Megan Buffington, KAXE News.
That's it for the Up North Report from the KAXE News Desk. I'm Chelsea Perkins, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is made possible by Woodland Bank, serving the area since 1920 with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River. Woodland Bank believes in building community and serving local nonprofits like KAXE.
You're tuned in to the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with the franchise Jen Killen, and we're here until 9 o'clock. Then we're going to hand things over to Kari Hedlund for Headwaters. Quick look at the weather today. Sunny with highs 43 to 46 degrees. West-northwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 25. Tonight, mostly clear. Lows in the upper 20s. West winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Thursday, sunny with highs in the upper 40s, low 50s, light and variable wind, overnight lows in the low 30s. And Friday, mostly sunny with highs in the mid to upper 50s. Going to warm up a little this weekend.
Yeah.
I bet you're pretty excited about that. You got big plans this weekend.
I am. I'm going to haul some firewood into the woodshed.
Wow.
While it's still dry.
Do you chop your own wood?
I have a splitter.
Oh, nice.
And his name is Augie.
Oh.
And he's not cheap.
Oh, no.
It takes a lot of food to fuel that thing.
That's true.
So, no, he does a good job.
He eats while he splits.
Just about. It's a fine line. It's tough. It's very fluid. A lot of snack breaks. No, okay. he does it by hand. So, like, you don't need to go lift weights. Just let's do this the old-fashioned way.
So, I'm curious, because I lived in a house with, like, fireplace, I believe you call it.
Okay. Actual?
Yeah, actual
with
fireplace.
With an actual chimney?
Yeah. And the guy who owned the house, he ordered the wood and got just a whole bunch of stack of wood.
Already cut. For you to use?
Yes.
Really?
So, and this pile was huge. Like, let's say the wall here, it would probably go up to that Joni Mitchell record there. Okay. From here to there.
Yep.
How much wood are we talking at your place? Are you cutting up?
A lot more than that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm guessing, I'm not an expert, not a logger, but I bet that would probably be about a cord's worth. And we...
Now, what does a cord's worth mean?
A cord is a measurement used in the firewood world to
measure.
Really? Yeah. You should look up the details. I don't remember the specifics.
Am I looking at cords worth?
Cord of wood, C-O-R-D. People listening right now are like, oh my gosh, why talk about this if you don't know this? People listening for sure know what I'm talking about.
Measure firewood and pulpwood.
Yep. Yeah. So we buy our wood that we're going to burn in 8-foot lengths, a 10-cord load on a semi. And then the logger comes to our house, has a little grapple on his semi, unloads the cords.
Cool.
8-foot. And then we cut them into chunks with a chainsaw that are like stove length, 16 inches or something. And then Augie comes out to the pile with his maul and starts splitting.
Now, what's a maul?
A maul is heavier than an axe.
Oh, okay.
It's got a heavier...
I'm learning all sorts of things
you
this
should
morning.
Come over. I bet Augie would love to show you how to do this.
So a cord is a amount of wood that, when racked and well-stowed, occupies a volume of 128 cubic feet.
Okay, and it's like 4 feet by 8 feet. Okay.
So.
Yeah.
One full cord.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a lot.
That's, so we probably...
And you're saying you make 4 cords?
We buy it by the 10-cord load.
Okay.
We probably... Depends on the winter, Needless to say, if it's cold, really cold, you burn more wood. I bet we probably... We have a teeny tiny house, so we don't burn as much as one could. But I bet we go through 4 cords a winter, maybe 5.
Well, it's supposed to be a very snowy winter this year, as
well. Are you believing the predictions, or are we just feeling guilty after 2 easy winters?
I want a snowy winter because I didn't get to go to cross-country ski at all last year.
Yeah, you didn't get out once. Did I go one time?
You went one time, and you bragged about it for, gosh, I don't know how long, at least a week.
Rubbed your nose in it, just like you and your fancy.
You were just like,
class.
Oh, I feel so exhilarated. I went cross country skiing this week. I'm ready for everything.
I had shop and home ec at the richest district in Minnesota, Stephen Argott.
Well, we definitely have our stories.
We have our ways to rib each other. I hope you get snow too.
I get snow.
Yeah.
You don't want it.
I mean, I'll take a little bit, but we have such a long driveway to plow.
That's true. So unlike do you have you, a truck for it, or do you...
Yeah, we use our truck.
Okay.
We used to have a snow blower on the tractor, which wasn't the right... It's the right tool if you have the right tractor and the right blower, but we had neither, so it didn't work. So we plow now.
Question for you. So what's your ice scraping situation? Do you have a good ice scraper?
Here's my hack. We have a garage.
Don't tell me to start the car and then leave it, because that hack.
No, I'm not going to tell you that. We have a garage, and it's full of everything but cars, so I cannot park in it. So the hack that we've used for several years, get yourself a tarp that's the same size as your windshield.
Mm-hmm.
You drive home at night, put the tarp over the windshield, close it in the front two doors... Lock your doors because you live in town. And then the next morning you come out, open the car, take the tarp off. All the frost and stuff's on the tarp. Clean windshield.
Question, wouldn't my car be colder from like the air getting in through the tarp part?
No, it's not. It's closed. Like the door closes tight on the edge of the tarp. So no, it's not any colder.
Just any old tarp will do.
Yeah.
Like the classic blue tarp.
Classic blue. You could get... Classic brown.
This is an interesting idea. So it saved me time.
Yes, it's going to save you time. You don't have to have your car running. And
honestly, it would save time for like clearing the car too, because you would just pull the...
Yes, if it snows.
Yeah, if it snows. Yes, this is a great idea, Jen. It's weird you've never told me this until now.
You never asked.
It's true.
Doesn't
asked.
It make you wonder what else I'm not telling
Yeah, what
you?
Else are you not telling me? What life hacks?
I don't know.
We receive support from the Watermark Art Center in downtown Bemidji with exhibits, classes, and handcrafted original art made by regional artists. Found their shop 505. The center is accessible and open to the public. WatermarkArtCenter.org.
Support also comes from AW Research Laboratories, located in Brainerd, providing water testing for private wells, real estate, lakes, and wastewater since 1972. Online at awlab.com.
And we receive support from the First State Bank of Big Fork, with branches in Big Fork and Kellyer, offering tools for managing money on any mobile device. Hometown banking at its best since 1912. FSBBigFork.com, member FDIC. And support for KXE comes from the Third Coast Chamber Collective, presenting chamber music up north, featuring an internationally renowned accordion and violin ensemble from Poland at Co House on November 20th at 7 p.m. Tickets available at thirdcoastchambercollective.com. Now it's time for Area Voices. My name is Andrew DeZingle, and I'm the producer of Area Voices. Bemidji Community Theater presents Anne of Green Gables, the musical, going on November 14th and 15th and the 21st through the 23rd. Today I'm joined by the stage director and the stage manager for the upcoming production, and I'm admittedly not that familiar with the story of Anne of Green Gables, so I'm excited to hear what this musical is all about.
Hi, I'm Mary Knox Johnson, and I'm the director and assistant scenic designer for Anne of Green Gables.
I'm Christine Cannon. I'm the stage manager and costume manager for Anne of Green Gables. Mary and I have worked together for how many productions now? 10, 12?
At least that many.
Yeah.
So what is Anne of Green Gables, the musical, about?
Well, Anne Shirley is this 11-year-old orphan who believes she's going to be adopted by the Cuthberts. So she comes to Avonlea, which is on Prince Edward Island in Canada, hoping to have her forever home. And she discovers that they actually wanted a boy and weren't expecting a girl. And so they had planned to send her back. And so after a much to-do, they decide to give her a trial period, and they decide to keep her eventually. And she becomes a member of the family.
Why did Anne of the Green Gables story get selected for this month's production?
I think our young people have been pressing us on this issue for a while, because there are a lot of good parts for young people. In fact, three of the leads are young people. So we have the character of Anne Shirley herself, her best friend Diana Barry, and Josie Pye. So it isn't often that you get a full-length musical that has that kind of power for younger actresses, especially. Most of them are designed and built and written for adult actors and actresses. So we have a very strong, vibrant, young community of young actors who've been involved now for a number of years. I believe the young girl playing Anne Shirley has been with us since she was 8 years old, and now she's in high school. So that's quite a period of time.
Additionally, it comes from, there's a book series. The books were written about the adventures of Anne Shirley on what is now Prince Edward Island. And they start in about the late 1800s. We're saying this is set in about 1876, 1878, that era. But the book series, I believe there's 8 books, which were very popular for young girls and adults as well for a long time. They were written in the early 1900s and became a very popular, you know, nowadays we'd say, oh, it's a YA series, you know. But I think our group, because they're interested in theater, they're interested in things, they read a lot. And many of these books were very beloved by this whole crew of kids, and it's not just the girls.
So with the young cast wanting to do this show and being it that the leads are younger people, was there like, did you have to like talk with them? Okay, this is what you wanted. Now we expect like you to give like 100% in this. Was there any kind of like that conversation?
We always expect that of our young people. So I think that they come to know that. I mean, last year they just finished an entire junior version of Little Mermaid, and they were required to put in 15 extra hours of online and in-person experience as far as technical theater. So I think that they know that's an expectation if they make a main stage production. So we're calling this a main stage production. And so that has a different set of requirements rather than, let's say, a summer camp production. And so I think they've come to accept that and know that. And we don't cut them any slack, no. They are expected to do the same things the adult actors would do. They have basically the same rehearsal schedule. And some of them, because they got leads, are expected to do even more outside the boundaries of that 3-day-a-week schedule.
I think our new people, both adults and young people, are a little bit surprised at the rigor of the rehearsal schedule. And we tell their parents ahead of time, this is not easy. This is not just let's put on some fun clothes and play. They have to learn their blocking. They have to sing. They have to deal with their props. Costumes are extensive. So each person is learning that this is not just your swing set theater during summertime when you bring the neighbors who bring their own chairs and a beverage.
I have a couple of coworkers who are big fans of the Anne of Green Gables story, and they were curious of like what's the kind of the music style for the musical part.
The music is fast, it's crisp, it's funny, poignant in some cases.
Yeah, I think if we were looking for a style or comparing it to something, the other musical that I think is close to it is Music Man. So it's that kind of style. Like it's upbeat. It's kind of dance music. It's fun. But most of the time it tells a story. But as far as a musical, it's very different as far as how usually you have a big finale number at the end of Act 1, which it does. And then you have an even bigger finale number at the end of Act 2. And this show does not. Because if you've read the books, you know, I don't want to be a spoiler here.
Yeah, no spoiler alert. It ends on a very poignant note.
There you go. With just 3 people on stage. So there's no big, giant finale that you're used to.
And unlike other musicals, you don't break into song and dance. You know, there's no big production number with 12 people on stage doing all the dance at the same time. Yay, rah. Everything, every piece of music advances the story as if there were some additional dialogue. Some dialogue set to music.
Friendship is such a central theme to the books. Would you say that's the case for the musical as well?
Yes. In this story, Anne Shirley, growing up, never had any real friends. She invented some imaginary friend. She invented a world. She invented her name. She calls herself the Lady Cordelia instead of Anne.
With an E.
And so when she gets to Avonlea, all of a sudden she does meet a young girl her own age, and they get to be friends for life. And so that is something very, very special to her, because she's never had that before. And she's moved around so much during her life before being, you know, fostered out here and maybe adopted there. But really what people were looking for was someone to do their work or to take care of their kids. No one really wanted her for herself. And so she never had a family that really loved her or accepted her with all of her flaws and foibles and imagination. Because she has a temper. I mean, she does. She gets in trouble the first day of school because Gilbert Blythe pulls her pigtails and calls her carrots because her hair is red. And she's very concerned about her appearance and takes things very seriously. And she's never learned to control her temper. And so it's something that she learns living there with the Cuthberts. But it's also part of those things that you learn growing up in a family that actually nurtures you. And she's never had that kind of family background until she arrives at the Cuthberts.
So I've seen a few photos online from the Bemidji Community Theater Facebook page, and the sets look amazing. What was that process like of creating, like, basically a town on stage?
Well, that has been a challenge. And it continues to be a challenge. So we do have a two-story house that revolves. And we are working on an articulated horse that will actually pull a buggy on stage. We still have a week to go. I think it will all work by the time we get to showtime. But we let our imaginations go wild as well. And I like a lot of detail in my sets. And so when you look at the Cuthbert kitchen, for example, you'll be able to recognize the flat irons for ironing, the matchbooks container, the enamelware, and the same thing in the general store. I mean, that store is plumb full of things that you would buy. So we do a lot of research of the era, and we try to recreate that as much as possible on stage.
Well, Mary's known for her sets and the set decoration, and in conjunction with her husband, Dwayne Johnson, they build the sets, and every detail is there. There's so much stuff. All of the details of the kitchen, you'll notice that the kitchen appears to have flowered wallpaper on it. That isn't wallpaper. That was hand-painted meticulously by Becca Lash, who is our scenic painter. People really enjoy it.
I think part of it is there's been a collaboration. I've worked with Christine now, and of course my husband, and Becca Lash. And we have musical, so Vicki Stenerson, this will be the first time she's directing music for us. But Carol L. Johnson has been with us for a long, long time. And I think it's because of that coalescence of that team that we'll feel very comfortable bouncing ideas off and whether they'll work or not. And sometimes we shoot for the moon and, you know, we reach the stars and not quite the moon, or the other way around, I can't remember. But we have a very fun experience and a very creative experience.
Right.
I'm also curious, because in the photos I saw, there's the townspeople. Like, there's so many people on stage at time. How is that for, like, blocking and directing and making sure everyone's, like, in character at all times? What was that process like?
Herding cats.
There are 35 of them.
Yeah, so 35 people.
35 people lined up from one end of the stage to the other. I don't even think they fit.
No, they don't.
So you have to be very creative in levels. We use a lot of different levels. And we play, you know, 2 feet from the audience. So that's what I like about our new stage, is that we are right there with the audience. And so we can use that space in front of the stage as part of the set. Mm-hmm. And so that makes it a little easier to maneuver that many people. But yes, it is difficult. And I write it all down, and I finally say to them when we're done blocking, I say, now it's your responsibility to know where you're supposed to be. I sort of know where you're supposed to be. And if you ask me specifically, I told you at one time. But if we make changes, you need to make those changes.
And once the show is blocked and we start to work a scene, it may become obvious that blocking isn't going to work. And we'll say, stop. Well, you keep changing our blocking, Mary. What should we do? And I say, we're changing the blocking to make you look better to the audience. We need the audience to see your face. If you're talking in profile to somebody else, you have to cheat out. The audience doesn't want to see your shoulder. They want to see your face. So it's techniques about turning around, cheating out. Those are the things that we teach on a regular basis. And some of the people who've been in many shows already know that. But we have quite a few new people in this show who've never been on stage before, or at least not on stage for us. And they're learning and growing along with it. We have a couple of people who I'm very excited about how they're kind of blending into the scene, even though they're with people who have been with us before, and they're just kind of fitting into the group and know where they're supposed to go. So this has been a real fun thing in terms of some of the new adults that we have in our cast.
So we got the shows on November 14th, 15th, and then the 21st to the 23rd, but there is no Sunday show that first weekend. So what will be happening instead?
So we're doing a matinee on that Saturday. So I call it the great experiment, because we often don't do a Saturday matinee, but people have been asking us to do one. And so it's like, okay, we're going to do a Saturday matinee on the 15th and then an evening show that night as well. But yes, the only Sunday matinee will be that second weekend on the 23rd. And we'll see how it goes. I mean,
yeah, it might be wonderful.
It might be wonderful. It might be in the future for these kinds of shows. We might just do a Saturday matinee and a Sunday matinee for 2 weekends instead of evening shows. I don't know. We'll see.
So where can people get tickets for the show?
You can get tickets online through our website at BemidjiCommunityTheater.com. We have 2 ticket outlets, Mackenzie Plays and Ken K. Thompson Jewelry. And we will have some tickets at the box office. It's selling fairly quickly, so if you're thinking about going, I'd secure your tickets.
I think they're just going to have a really fun time. I think it's a fun musical. It's got a poignant message. It's a little different than your average musicals. It's a great opportunity for the whole family. I mean, we have kids as young as 8 in mm-hmm. the show. I don't know that infants would necessarily sit through it. But I think elementary age students and older, this isn't just a chick flick. I mean, some people think this is a chick flick because the lead is a girl. But like we said, we showed the movie one day, and our boys, too, were just kind of chuckling about how much spunk Anne Shirley had. And so they identified with her as well in the situation that she was in. So it's a show for everybody.
It's a show for everybody. And, you know, as far as the boys are concerned, there are some good roles for boys in this show. Gilbert Blythe, of course, but they're going to get their chance come spring when we do The Sword and the Stone.
Mary Knox Johnson and Christine Cannon have been my guests today. Anne of Green Gables, the musical, will be going on November 14th and the 15th and November 21st through the 23rd. There is no matinee on the 16th. There is a matinee on November 15th with another performance later in the evening. Area Voices is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota. And you're tuned in to the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with Jen Kellen, and we are wrapping things up before we hand things over to Kari Hedlund for Headwaters.
We receive support from the Move It Real Estate Group, assisting clients with real estate purchases and sales for over 25 years, not only in Grand Rapids, but across northern Minnesota. More, move to what moves you. More at moveitrealestate.com.
And programming on KXE KBXE is supported in part by MinSure, offering Minnesotans the opportunity to find discounts, compare private health plans, and see if they qualify for no-cost or low-cost insurance. Expert advice is also available. The enrollment deadline is December 18th for coverage starting January 1st. Information and enrollment are online at mnsure.org.
This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. We are People Powered Radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org.
And weather today, sunny skies with highs 43 to 46 degrees, west-northwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts getting up to 25. Tonight, mostly clear, lows in the upper 20s, west winds 5 to 10 miles per hour.